Hey folks, Heather Cox Richardson and Joanne Freeman here. Thank you for being members of the Cafe Insider community.
This is Backstage, a special segment of the Now and Then podcast exclusively for you. We hope you enjoy it. This may be true for you, Heather. It's certainly true for me. And I would wager money, if I was a wagering kind of a person, that some of the people listening to this episode have been thinking this too. How can you discuss the mob in any way and not think of The Godfather? Or for that matter, popular culture. Because as we started out by saying, as you suggested towards the start of our episode, the mob has such a dramatic and even in some cases romantic reputation. It plays a role in so much of popular culture. You and I am sure, both have a really strong sense of the mob just from watching movies and TV shows. Were you someone who watched The Godfather, either
what,
parts one, two, or however many
think,
parts
there
ended up being?
Was I someone who watched The Godfather?
I know. That's such an easy question. It's like, by this point in our relationship, Heather, if I'm asking you about popular culture, I have to assume that the answer is probably not.
Actually, there's a great story about that. The Godfather came on television when I was a kid, and my mother thought it was very inappropriate for us to watch. I guess it was just me and my sister home at the time. So when it came on, we were not allowed to watch it. Our household wasn't allowed to watch it. My father wanted to watch it. Mother wouldn't let him either. And the funny thing is that I had a sleepover that night and went to someone's house and their entire family was watching it. But I knew that it would bother me. So while they all watched The Godfather, I read a book. So I think I have seen The Godfather now, the first one or the second one. I certainly, when people mention it, I feel like I've got flashbacks to it. But I never saw the third for sure.
I don't think I watched it when it first came out. I think like you know, I've now seen it and I don't know when I first saw it. And I do feel like there's so many aspects of it that are sort of in popular culture in so many ways that even if you haven't seen it, you probably have a sense of it, like, you know, horses' heads and beds and things like that, that, you know, scenes that stand out and that other people know about.
So that I know because a dear friend of mine knows more about the mob than anybody should know. And we were messing around one day writing stuff, and the favorite thing I've ever written is an article about 10 famous horses in American society. And I watched Mr. Ed, I did all kinds of stuff. You can tell this was like, you know, me wasting time. And I showed it to my friend, and he said, well, you're missing Khartoum. And I'm like, I'm missing who? You know, I managed Secretariat, I managed Mr. Ed, I managed, you know, Trigger, Man of War, all those horses, but I didn't manage Khartoum. And Khartoum,
Black Beauty.
Black Beauty's not American.
Oh,
I'm sorry, they were American horses. Khartoum was, you are laughing at me. It was my favorite thing I ever wrote. It was so much fun.
I'm laughing because you're so serious about it, but go on. I'm sorry, I'm stopping.
Okay. Khartoum was the name of the horse in Mario Puzo's book, The Godfather, that was owned by Jack Waltz, who was the fictional Hollywood mogul in that book. And in the scene, in the movie, when Waltz refuses Corleone's demand to cast Johnny Fontaine in a movie, that's when Waltz wakes up and finds the horse's head in bed with him and agrees to use the thing in the film. But according to my friend, there's an old Hollywood rumor that story is real, that mobsters persuaded an executive from Columbia Pictures, a guy named Harry Cohn, to cast Frank Sinatra in From Here to Eternity. And that's when Sinatra won the Best Supporting Actor. That's not coming from me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name, but this is entirely my friend who's so good on the mob. Did you see it, though?
I did. I did see it. I don't remember when I saw it. What stands out to me, since it's been forever since I've seen it, is the sense of family and the sense of tragic necessity, sort of what happens in that movie, so that you feel very sympathetic. Even, you know, in a way, it does make me think of The Sopranos, which I watched actually during the pandemic because I had somehow missed it all along. Same idea that there's like they manage to show these people doing these dark, horrible, nasty, cruel, bloody things. And yet at the same time, because you are getting to know them in some way as people, there's something, at least in some of their cases, sympathetic about them. And that's such an interesting mix of emotions you get sucked into, in which you feel a little sympathetic for these characters, and then you feel a little dirty for being sympathetic towards them, given what they're doing. The Sopranos, I watched the whole however many episodes there were, and I binge watched it because I was at home and could do that. And kind of along the same lines as my older memory about The Godfather, it's the mix of extreme emotion in watching that, and the fact that you personally become engaged with what's going on there in a way that has a power to it, but that feels bad at the same time. It's really fascinating. So not only is there, you know, I don't like using the word romance to the mob, but there's a pull to those kinds of intense emotions that works, I think, perfectly well in entertainment for that very reason.
Maybe it's because part of it is the question of what one would do for money and power and what one wouldn't do. So in the case of Tony Soprano, for example, yeah, I mean, he's a very complicated character, but even better was his mother, who was, you know,
right.
What she wouldn't do for money and power was extraordinary. And I think perhaps that exposes some of the deeper issues in humanity of what would you do and what wouldn't you do that comes out when you study the mob.
You mentioned the mother. Some of what both of the Godfather group of things and the Sopranos TV series make clear is that what we're talking about is family in every sense of the word. So the family as the organization, but also both of those blobs of entertainment are really focused on how what we're talking about is something that goes really deep, family-wide. And that gets back to some of what we were talking about in this episode, that's part of what makes these loyalties so meaningful and gives them such pull.
And maybe that's it. Maybe it's the idea of family in extreme circumstances, both the good and the bad. I will say, though, I do have a favorite movie about organized crime, and that is Gross Point Blank, which to my mind is the perfectly written movie. And the great double entendre, if you will, there about organized crime is the plot in it is that Dan Aykroyd is trying to organize as a union all of the hitmen, you know, in his circle. And the main character, played by John Cusack, doesn't want to be part of a union. He says, lone gunman, that's the whole point. And the whole driver of the plot is the fact that you literally have this hitman trying to create a union from all these different organizations. So sort of a modern day Lucky Luciano, only tight and well-written.
I have to say something here because it has not happened thus far. This is a popular culture thing, Heather, that you know, and I
ooh,
do not
can we
know.
Savor this moment?
We can, and I can be like, I'm virtuous, and I've never seen Gross Point Blank. I was doing important things, like I don't know what I was doing. Find an important thing for me to do, and I was doing it.
Well, I have to tell you that I love the movie because of the writing. You know, for me, it's always about how you write things. And I love the movie because of the writing. And the acting is superb. I mean, Joan Cusack is always brilliant anyway, but Joan Cusack and John Cusack and Minnie Driver and Dan Aykroyd and Alan Arkin. I mean, it's just a whole major cast. But it's funny because I'm not into the plot necessarily, but into the writing and into just how well they made the visuals work with the language, with the music. The soundtrack is amazing and so on. And I once said many years ago, I think I saw it shortly after it came out, to somebody, one of my students asked me what my favorite movie was. And without thinking, I said, well, Gross Point Blank. And he, of course, was significantly younger than I am. And he looked at me. I still remember the look on his face. And he said, it is profoundly disturbing that that is your favorite movie, because it's about a hitman who goes home for his high school reunion, right? And I'm like, no, it's not that it's not a how-to manual. It's that it's so brilliantly written.
That's a larger question. That's a larger question, which is about when you admit things like that to your students and without thinking, you say something like that and then you realize the implications. These young impressionable minds are like, wait, that's very funny.
Oh, I have to do that all the time when I say, oh my God, isn't this fun? What I mean is, as a historian, isn't it interesting to see how these ideas change? And I'm not saying, oh, this is fun that they went ahead and did whatever.
But they can see that in you, right? I mean, this gets back to the mob and romance. When you get excited by something or you know, you're talking about something in history, even if it's a bad thing in history and you feel passionately about it or it plugs into things you're interested in and you show that as a teacher should, the students pick up on that. And then they're like, oh, this is really interesting. Why are we interested in this? The sort of discomfort on the faces of students, kind of like what I just said about The Sopranos, that you're sort of being drawn into something along with your teacher, and then you're not quite sure if you should be drawn into it. I find that sort of mix of emotions about the mafia on film, and, you know, I have no connection with it in larger life, but there's got to be some of that there too. The loyalty of it, the meaning of it, the depth of it, and the darkness and the crime and the blood and the drama and the badness of it sort of all being there in one way or another together.
Well, for me, I'm often saying, you know, isn't this cool? And this is one of those cases where the minute we heard about Ellie's podcast series, we're like, oh, that's cool. We should do something on that. And now I feel a little less bad about that when we actually realize that studying the mob is a study of the relationship between what is part of our American DNA, if you will, associationism, and its effect on the government.
But it also reminds me of a moment in my research for my last book when I found a particularly violent member of Congress, and I was tracking him, and I was cheering off to the side because he was giving me material, right? I was like, oh, excellent, he did this bad thing. Oh, you know, he did this bad thing, dude, that's great. Oh, another bad thing he did. And I'm writing all this down, and I'm like, what does this tell me? This is fascinating, I'm so excited. And then he disappears from the record. And I'm like, what happened to my guy? Like, where did he go? And I begin poking around and researching, and lo and behold,
I just know this is going nowhere good.
It's not going anywhere good. As it turns out, he had a serious alcohol problem. So first of all, what I'm cheering on is behavior that's prone to a man who drinks too much. He kills himself. He kills himself in the middle of a congressional session. And actually, it's James Polk.
Not literally in the House.
No.
Okay. Is,
but he goes to a bar. He pays for drinks for everyone in the bar, goes back to the room where he's living, and kills himself. And so there I am, confronted with cheering on this behavior that was useful to me and interesting and even in some ways entertaining, since it doesn't result in actual violence. And then I discover the reality of it. And I felt horrified that it really taught me a lesson about, on the one hand, being pulled into things as a scholar, and then on the other hand, the kind of responsibility you have towards what you're addressing and what the implications are, and your need to think about that and never let that get too far from view, which is probably also true if you're studying the mafia. Thank you for joining us backstage.
Be sure to write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. See you next time.